The sun minor conditions are not stable for me, but I see a push and not just in outside the door, so that those will get lost and go to the previous venue that was announced and find their way to the venue. My name is Lumka. My surname is Yengeni. I'm the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Labor. I wish to welcome everybody who is in the house, more especially people who are coming from the department, because I'm meeting them for the first time. I just want to say to them, I know we are going to have a good time. We are going to forge a good relationship between us and yourselves. But that does not mean that we will not perform or do the task that we are supposed to be doing as members of parliament, of doing oversight on the department, of making the department to account, and shaping the department to be what it's supposed to be. And I have no doubt that that will happen without any problems amongst ourselves. You also know what is your responsibility as a department. You've been here long before me. I don't need to lecture you on that. I know that you are good ladies and gentlemen who know their task very well. There are some few members who are not here. They're not many. I haven't seen a person from the IFC. We have members from TA. I'm going to give an opportunity for people to introduce themselves. Fortunately, I had an opportunity of going around meeting everybody since I'm meeting you for the first time. We have a member from ECO. Those are the two opposition parties that are here. The only one that is not here is IFP. Or of Freedom Fund. I'm sorry to you see what makes me not to mention Freedom Fund today. It is not in this list. And my apologies to the member of the Freedom Fund for not mentioning them. I will allow first the members of the department to introduce themselves to the members, who the person is from, exactly where in the department, where they're located in the department. And after that, to the members. Let's start from this side, up to the last person.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Sam Rotoba. I'm currently the acting Director General Department of Labor. My portfolio in the department is that of Deputy Director General Employment and Skills Development Services.
I'm Sheikh Nkonto, Commissioner for the Compensation Fund in the Department of Labor.
I'm Dave Matuna, the CFO of the Department of Labor.
Good morning, my name is Freddy Peterson. I'm Financial Management Oversight of the Public Entities.
Good morning, my name is David Kyle, also from Financial Management and Labor.
Thank you. My name is Pianda Zuniki, Deputy Director General for Service Delivery in the Department.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Les Kettles, as Deputy Director General for Labor Policy and Labor Market Programs. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Boaz Rowe, the UIF Commissioner.
Good morning. I'm
I'm Khalid Bill, I'm the Executive Manager for Communications in the Department of Labor.
My name is Valise Spies, and I'm from the Freedom Front.
Wilmania Druchen, ANC, Sign Language Interpreter, the Transport Day from Rinal Davis. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mr. Protesi from ANC. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Lowe from the DA.
I'm Ian Ollis. I'm also from the DA.
Good morning, my name is Tina Ruiz, Executive Manager in the DG's Office, Department of Labor.
Chair, thank you. Maybe just before you start, would you please allow me to ask whether we do form a quorum?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start off by saying that we want to thank you for giving us this opportunity just before our budget vote speech, which the Minister is going to deliver on the 19th. We know exactly the kind of expectations and pressures that you are under, and we also know the responsibilities that we are having to carry as the department. We have been to the Forum of Director Generals in Kota. We have had meetings with the President, our Minister, and we understand fully the political, economic, and social pressures that are facing all of us, and we hope to do our best under these circumstances to work with you and to assist this government in delivering on the kind of expectations that the population in general has. Let me start off by also indicating that we had slight problems in terms of our documentation, but Chairperson, we will make sure that this does not happen again, that you don't receive these documents on time. Just briefly, the documents that I'll be referring to that were circulated, there's a blue document which in my discussion with the minister, I was also informed that you received it, which is the strategic plan 2008 to 2011. This is the document that we discussed with the outgoing members of the portfolio committee, and subsequent to elections and the finalization of the medium-term strategic framework for the next 5 years, we started a process of realigning our initiatives and interventions in the department, and making sure that we do our work in line with the President's State of the Nation address. We produced a draft strategic plan, which is going to be finalized around the 2nd and 3rd of July in our management meeting, and we are hoping that you will also form part of that meeting. Either the invite is still on its way, or you should have received it by now. And we will then, after those workshop, formally table it, but we can use it as a working document in the meantime. We also circulated a preliminary annual report of the department, which provides you in detail the work that we have done during the last financial year. It captures the achievements, challenges, and those targets that we could not meet during the financial year. That information is submitted to the Auditor General on the 31st of May, and it is going to form part of the financial statements that are currently being audited. And in August, we will then formally table an annual report of the department. But that information, you can use it as well, because the annual report tend to be much more complex and does not give a sense of the work that we do in detail. I will now go straight to the presentation which we circulated. Chair, in the Honorable Chairperson, in the presentation, I will touch briefly on the Department of Labor's organogram, the public entities that we have, and the areas of coverage. I'll reflect on the vision and mission, the government strategic priorities 2009 to 2014, and how the strategic plan intends aligning itself to that. And lastly, talk to the budget for the period 2009 to 2010 financial year. Briefly on our structure, we do have a position of the Director General that is currently vacant and should be filled in the next 2 months, and that of the acting, that of corporate services, which is also in the process of being filled. But I think colleagues have already introduced themselves, basically leading the various positions that we have. Just in terms of the coverage, the department and the laws fall within the national competence sphere. But we do have our head office in Gauteng, provincial offices in all the provinces, and a total of 125 labor centers. We also have 20 mobile centers that we use to extend to those areas that we could not, we can't ordinarily reach. And we also have 4 satellite offices. We also, over and above the offices that we have across the country, a number of public entities that form part and parcel of the Department of Labor framework and implementation agencies. They also, there are some that are part of legislative bodies that do not necessarily have own offices, but assist us in implementing our laws. And these are statutory bodies, and we also have public entities. Now, amongst the statutory bodies are bodies such as the Advisory Council for Occupational Health and Safety, the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration is a public entity. The Commission for Employment Equity is a statutory body. Employment Condition Commission is a statutory body. The National Skills Authority is also a statutory body. Unemployment Insurance Fund, Unemployment Insurance Board, and the Compensation Board are also statutory bodies, whilst the Productivity South Africa and 23 Sitas, NEDLAC, and Umsobo Mbuni Fund are public entities. I use different colors just to indicate that there is discussion currently going on in terms of the future location of this some of these entities. With Umsobo Mbuni, we have already finalized those discussions. What remains is just the final transfer of the fund's assets and liabilities to the National Youth Development Agency that is located in the Minister in the Presidency. And with respect to the others, there is discussion that is currently happening with the Ministry of Higher Education and Training as per the President's announcement regarding their future. Just on the vision of the department, we strive for a labor market which is conducive to economic growth, investment, and employment creation, which is characterized by rising skills, equity, sound labor relations, respect for employment standards, and worker rights. And our mission statement up to now has not changed, in that we have committed ourselves to play a significant role in reducing unemployment, poverty, and inequality through a set of policies and programs developed in consultation with social partners, which are aimed at, firstly, improved economic efficiency and productivity, skills development and employment creation, sound labor relations, eliminating inequality and discrimination in the workplace, alleviating poverty in employment, enhancing occupational health and safety awareness and compliance in the workplace, and lastly, nurturing the culture of acceptance that worker rights are human rights. We have had extensive discussions taking into consideration the proposed changes, the future, and we have now, as part of the stretch plan, adjusted some of the aspects. In that we are looking or moving towards a situation where the Department of Labor will focus on employment services, which constitute a set of proactive, or what we call labor market, that is active labor market intervention, providing a link between a whole range of employment services functions that encompasses career guidance and placement services, skills development, unemployment insurance, and compensation. Whilst on the other hand, we will also be looking at the enforcement of our labor laws through the inspection, research, and making sure that we enforce the adherence of our labor laws. And we may have to again relook at some of those aspects given the changes that have been announced during May and during the President's State of the Nation. We have looked, Honorable Chairperson, on the strategic priorities of government for the period 2009 to 2010. The first one being speeding up economic growth and transforming the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods, strengthening our skills and human resources, improve the health and profile of the nation, comprehensive rural development, intensifying the fight against crime and corruption, massive programs to build economic and social infrastructure, building cohesive and caring sustainable communities, sustainable resource management, testing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation, and lastly building a developmental state, including improvement of public service and strengthening democratic institutions. What we have done in terms of this document, Honorable Chairperson, was to take the new strategic objectives as agreed to during the Lakota and announced by the State President during the State of the Nation address, and then begin to reposition the department. And you will see in the draft document how we have attempted to the best of our ability and subject to those final discussions, how we intend redirecting our programs, including the funds that have been allocated to us for the 9 and 10. We know that we were not going to be given additional funding despite the new priorities. We had to try our best to realign our programs in such a way that we are able to contribute to each of the strategic priorities as outlined by the President. And this strategic plan attempts to do that. And I'm sure a number of government departments, including ourselves, are still in the process of doing that, because ordinarily would have normally done this during the February-March period, following the State of the Nation address that normally happens in February. And this year is different, and I think we all understand the changes that occurred. And lastly, without going into detail in this document, we basically identified a number of key projects that we believe fit in squarely in the priorities as identified. The first one relates to decent work country program, and this is based on the four pillars of the decent work agenda that will be dealt with in the context of related government reform processes and the obligations that we all have. The first deals with the fundamental principles and rights at work and international labor standards. The second one relates to employment and income opportunities, the social dialogue and tripartism, and the social protection and social insurance. In terms of employment creation, we believe that we will be able to contribute in a number of ways. The first one dealing with the skills development, where we are going to prioritize the whole question of artisan development and other skills and critical skills to meet the needs of the economy, that is to meet our social development needs and the redress in terms of achieving equity. The training of people facing retrenchment or retrenched due to the global economic recession, I think the President talked to this matter as part of our training layoff intervention that we are currently discussing with CITAS, and where the CITAS, the National Skills Fund, and the Unemployment Insurance Fund will work together to deal with the impact of the global economic crisis by assisting those that are likely to face retrenchment in the identified distress companies. We'll also continue to provide employment services functions, mainly to facilitate the registration of work seekers, those that are being retrenched to be on the database, so that we can redirect them to those areas where their skills are needed. We'll also continue with the registration of placement opportunities, jobs, and so on. And our program of matching the work seekers with those jobs and providing the career guidance and counseling to mainly the thousands or millions of young people who flock to our offices in need of advice and provide information, including referrals to those areas where they can be further developed. And obviously the sector skills plans will be aligned to sectoral growth plans. And this is aimed at making sure that the skills that seekers and so on, that is the providers that we fund under the National Skills Fund, target those skills that will lead people to employment. And lastly, the training of participants in the expanded public works program. The president talked about the 500,000 jobs, and in the main, our department has over the years worked with the Department of Public Works in those programs, because we provide the training component and the funding for the learning component, while the various municipalities and provincial governments provide project funding. Now, Chairperson, I'm raising these areas, but I must also emphasize that we are also at a very, very much advanced stage in terms of our discussion with the Department of Higher Education and Training to implement the decision that was taken around the transfer of the skills development function to the Ministry of Education. There are a number of issues that I will touch on relating to the Act and the presidential proclamation that both ministers, ourselves, and the task teams concerned are currently addressing. The third area relates to the inspection and enforcement project, where we have been tasked, and this project has been going on for quite a number of times, years now, and we want to bring this to finality, which is the integration of occupational health and safety competencies across government departments. And this is where, on one hand, the inspectors that continue to inspect workplaces from the Department of Labor will be integrated with other level of inspectors that are demarcated. Currently, the Ministry of Mining has jurisdiction in the mines under the Mining Health and Safety Act, and the inspectorate to inspect the mines. And the Ministry of Health has a responsibility in terms of other public areas, shops and so on. And Cabinet took a decision that we need to integrate those laws and have one common base, and the home in this case was chosen as the Department of Labor. And once the necessary bill and act is passed, the intention is to integrate all those under a single roof. Under the same objective, the whole idea of professionalizing the inspectorate is something that we look at, because over the years we have lost a number of inspectors that we have to the private sector and mainly to other departments because they are needed in those areas, and we didn't have a proper career pathing framework. Under the fourth objective, that is the labor market review project, this is where we, in order to deal with some of the problems that we've been having, the terminology of labor broking, although not defined anywhere in our act, have been doing some rounds. But this is the area where people are employed without formal contract and are employed by different employers in the process and end up not knowing who their employers are, and in the process end up not enjoying other labor relations or worker rights. People get dismissed and they're subjected to all sorts of unfair treatment and so on. And this is one area where we will be concentrating on to either, that is to regulate and to prohibit the exploitation of workers in those sectors. The second one is the area that I referred on, earlier around the presidential proclamation and or amendments to the Skills Development Act, because with the transfer of the skills development function to the Department of Higher Education and Training, what we have established, Chairperson, is that there are some aspects of the legislation that would not easily fit in there. For instance, we have the concept of learnerships and apprenticeships happening in the workplace, whilst the training component would fit squarely in the Department of Higher Education and Training. The enforcement aspects and the contracts would normally happen in the workplace. And from the legal advice that we got, both from the state law advisors and our own lawyers, was that maybe we needed to remove those enforcement aspects and put them in the inspectorate decision, so that you don't end up in a situation where you can, for instance, have a young person in an apprenticeship getting injured in the workplace, and then in the process you don't know how to deal with the situation because of the jurisdiction problems and so on. And those, we have a list of those aspects that we have been advised on, and these are the aspects that we are working on, so that the president can then issue a proclamation in that regard. There are amendments that we've identified on the unemployment insurance fund. Some relate to responding to the current global crisis, extending the coverage and benefits. And I'm sure the minister will talk in detail during the budget vote and the OHS. In terms of projects linked to the review of the Department of Labor's organizational structure, there are aspects that we are involved in relation to the decentralization of functions and authority to our provinces, the development of a service delivery model for the department in order to adapt to the new changes, the CTAS transfer, because there are labor relations implications with people working in this area at head office, in our provincial offices, labor centers, and in the public entities that we have to look at. There are aspects on the restructuring of the compensation fund and sheltered employment. In relation to the Department of Labor's ICT project, this is the system or the vehicle that we really need to ensure that we can deliver. And in this area, there are systems that are currently underway to develop our business processes and to ensure our efficiency. This relates to the integrated client database, the claims management system, and the revenue collection within the compensation fund, the executive dashboard, which is the information management system, the inspection and enforcement services case management system, the quality council for trades and occupations, employment services and career guidance systems, and the national skills fund disbursement system. In terms of our contribution to the anti-poverty strategy, because this is where there was an acknowledgement even in the President's State of the Nation address, that poverty and unemployment remains a big challenge, and each department will have to then identify or outline how it is going to contribute in this area. And again, we have also, and you will notice in the draft strategic plan, how we believe that our interventions, such as the minimum sectoral wage determination that are normally done for domestic workers, those people without collective bargaining rights, less organized and without unions and so on. We believe that by protecting and giving them a basic minimum wage, we are able to ensure contribution to contribution towards their grading of their living standards. The unemployment insurance fund, I think currently is on the spotlight given the retrenchment to provide that interim income relief whilst people are looking for employment. The compensation fund also provides that interim relief for those people who are injured or contract occupational diseases. The learnership and apprenticeship programs are based on the notion of young people being trained and working in a formal working place, but they do not necessarily receive a salary. They receive an allowance that allows them to continue to meet their basic needs. And the same thing applies to the social development funding window projects that we run with the public works and the various departments, where the learners who participate in those programs get a daily allowance ranging between 33 rand and 50 rand just to meet their transport and daily food needs. And lastly, the sheltered employment factories that provide special employment for people with disabilities. We have 11 of them across the country, and there are processes that are aimed at expanding their capacity so that we can take on more people with disability in those sectors, both for employment purposes and for training purposes, so that companies that require people with disability can also recruit from there. If I can then focus on the budget vote that was allocated to us, that we are going to do everything within our power to meet all those needs. You notice that Honorable Chairperson, under administration, we have been allocated an amount of 392 million. Under service delivery, 777, an increase of 86.7 million. And employment and skill development services, we have been allocated 481 million, which is an increase of 277 million. And under the labor policy and labor market program, we have been allocated 466 million, which is an increase of 25.4 million. And under the social insurance, that was decreased from the initial baseline allocation of 10.5 to 8.9 million, which is a decrease of 1.5 million. And just to explain the social insurance, normally people that is who are in the various industries, when they get injured or contract diseases at work, they will normally submit their claims with the compensation fund. People like those who get injured and so on in the mines normally have a separate fund from ours. But the public servants who get injured and contract diseases at work would normally submit their claims from the social insurance fund, which is currently administered by the department. So that is where we have the insurance. The next slide just gives you a graphical explanation of the increments, and the next slide gives you the reasons. The dramatic increase under ESDS, or Employment and Skills Development Services, was due to the money that was allocated to Umsobumbu Youth Fund and the National Youth Development Agency. This money could not be allocated to the National Youth Development Agency at the time because the Act was still under discussion in Parliament. And based on the understanding that the National Youth Commission and Umsobumbu were going to merge, the money was allocated to the Department of Labor and is administered by Employment and Skills Development Services for transfer to Umsobumbu Youth Fund. And currently, working together with the Minister in the Presidency, the National Treasury, and the National Youth Development Agency. We have effected transfers to Umsobomu Youth Fund because the commissioners are being paid under Umsobomu Youth Fund, and we are now involved in a final process of transferring this allocation to the ministry of, that is the minister in the presidency, because he will then, the DG in the minister in the presidency will then assume the responsibility in terms of transferring these funds to the National Youth Development Agency to be launched on June 16th. The next allocation was to the service delivery, especially in relation to the career counselors and to strengthen our employment services and inspectorate division. That is where you see the dramatic increase. And the last, I think, were mainly just in line with the inflation, and the LPN and labor market policy and labor market programs was due to CCMA increased allocation. Now, if you do a projected allocation from the budget that we had during the 2008-09, because of the global recession and so on, you will see that our projection, instead of increasing, is actually decreasing. The 2009-2010 budget reflects a decrease of 9.8 million. The 2010-11 a further decrease of 27.1, and the 2011-2012 a further decrease of 50.1. And obviously, if the situation or the current economic situation continues, we have had discussions with Treasury, it may mean that we may get revised letters that also again indicate a further reduction in our allocation going forward. But these are ongoing discussions with National Treasury. It's not unique to the Department of Labor. It cuts across all departments because we all experience reductions in our initial baseline. And in conclusion, Honorable Chairperson, we believe that once the strategic plan is finalized and aligned to the government priorities, it will form the basis on which we believe that the public can hold the Department of Labor accountable too, and we believe that this will be the best way in which we will be able to contribute to the priorities as outlined by the President. And I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity.
By the department. Are there any clarities before we take questions? Clarities on the briefing by the SDG? Or we just want to go straight to questions? Okay. A question?
Thank you. Could we just get some clarity on this merger between the Umsobomu Youth Fund and the National Youth Commission? What their new purpose is going to be? What is the new agenda of this big combined department? I mean, they're going to have a very substantial budget. It's not a small entity, this new entity, and I'd like to just have a rough idea. I know they're getting transferred out of our department, so it doesn't need to be a detailed response, just some sort of clarity of what exactly their duty will be in the future. And then we speak about the skills development functions being transferred to education. I just want to know what that includes. Does that include just the CETAs? Are the CETAs being all transferred to higher education? Is it a portion of the cluster of CETAs? And then are there any other skills development functions that are going to be transferred out? Is it just the features or are there other things that are going to be transferred out? And then, and then a last question on page 7 of the presentation. There is a statement in terms of amending the Labor Relations Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And it says enforce regulation in order to prohibit exploitation through labor broking. Is the intention to prohibit labor broking altogether, or is the intention to write regulations to prevent the exploitation of people, but to allow labor broking continue in a different form with new regulations and so on in place? If I could just get some clarity on those three issues, thank you.
Page 6, line 11. I would like to know if the department has any joint program with the Department of Education that assisting the department to reduce the number of learners who graduate from high school not knowing exactly which career to follow at tertiary level, and end up adding to the number of dropouts.
Okay, that's not Honorable Velma, it's Honorable Dikeledi Sotezi. Now, Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the Department of Health for your presentation. I do have two questions. The first question is in relation to the Umsumbubu Youth Fund. Will the department give this committee more a briefing on the transfers that's going to happen with the transfers of the funds and the assets to then the presidency? And then secondly, people with disabilities. Not all people with disabilities are in sheltered employment. So I want to see where the other people with disabilities and where the departments are working towards assisting people with disabilities. We know that people with disabilities are not only in sheltered employment, but you haven't mentioned any strategic objectives towards people with disabilities that are not in sheltered employment regarding education and training. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nivold. Any more questions? Honorable Matisha? Please?
They have come with the actual exact figure of unemployment. I'm raising this so that when we go on to work towards alleviating or eradicating unemployment in the country, we may do so targeting a particular figure. But secondly, he has raised the issue of, I think it's on page 7, of labor broking. And the department here has shown that the intention is to amend LRA and GCEA to prohibit exploitation of workers. I think that is quite okay. But then, while this is a step in the right direction, but the reality is that this is done, you know, at, underground, if you were to put that, to use that way. An example would be workers who died last week in the mine. It does not know that you have this kind of thing. As the department looked into the actualization of this thing, I mean, simply amending does not mean you have dealt with the problem. As the department looked into this,
thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
I'll ask Mr. Kettledust to deal with the question relating to the amendment to the Act and the questions raised by Honorable Madisha in relation to the figures relating to unemployment levels and disabled, that is, people with disabilities, the work that we are doing beyond the shelter employment. I will also touch on some of those. Just in relation to the measure between the National Youth Commission and the Unemployment Insurance Fund, obviously the starting point is that we were responsible for unemployment, the Umsobomvu Youth Fund. This Parliament passed an act called the National Youth Development Agency Act, which amongst others emphasizes the whole question of skills development, the information, providing support in terms of financial resources and so on amongst the young people of this country. And the whole question of the measure was to make sure that you have a coherent program targeting youth being coordinated in the office of the presidency, which is why both the National Youth Commission, which initially had the oversight role in terms of policy, and Umsobomvu, which had the implementation arm, are now being meshed together, and they are now moving, or they, in fact, currently as we speak, they are working together under a single authority under the direction of the chairperson, Mr. Andile, who is the chairperson of the National Youth Development Agency. And there is a process to appoint a CEO who will then take over everything. As for the transfer of assets, that is all assets, rights, liabilities, and obligations of Umsobomvu and the National Youth Commission will become the responsibilities of the National Youth Development Agency. I looked at the program, Honorable Chairperson, and have noted that Umsobomvu Youth Fund is coming on Friday to do a presentation, and I'm sure they can further elaborate on those discussions. But I will just stop there on the question of Umsobomvu. On the question around those aspects that relate to the transfer to higher education and training, and what does it mean? I must say that what we were informed, which is obviously a political decision, was the transfer of CTAS and the Levies Act. And in the process, we engaged in discussion to point out to the fact that CTAS are one of the cluster and entities of institutions that are established in terms of the Skills Development Act that are interlinked. And that is why the debate then it was further clarified that what they meant was the transfer of the Skills Development Act to the Ministry of Higher Education and Training. And this is the process that I said we've been involved in the process to finalize that because ours as officials is to facilitate that happens, and that in the process there's no disruption, loss of momentum, or anything that can happen and come back to haunt us at a later stage, which is why we are working with the state law advisors and people who are preparing the proclamation to make sure that that process is really smooth. Briefly, on some aspects that relate to the people with disability, although Mr. Kettledas is going to speak to this issue as well, is that if you look at the Skills Development Act, I'm sure we'll touch on employment equity and other areas, you will know that we have targets that were set under the National Skills Development Strategy to 2005 to 2010, and currently the strategy is under review, where the strategy talks to the fact that anybody participating in skills development intervention or where we are allocating funding, we expect anybody who is a recipient of those funds to ensure that at least 85% of beneficiaries of those programs are black, 54% of the beneficiaries of those programs are women, and 4% of the beneficiaries of all those programs are people with disability, and that youth should constitute 50%, that is 50% plus one, of all beneficiaries across all the programs of the National Development. And Mr. Kettledas maybe will answer the series of other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I just add and pick up from the people with disabilities, what we have also done is to promulgate a code of good practice for the employment of people with disabilities, and we have supplemented the code of good practice with technical assistance guidelines to assist employers and workers in the workplace for the managing the employment of people with disabilities. So once they are then in the workplace, the training, as Mr. Morotoba has indicated, should then take place, that at least 4% of people in skills development programs should be from people with disabilities. So we encourage the greater use of the Code of Good Practice and the technical assistance guidelines to promote the employment of people with disabilities. Secondly, dealing with the issue of labor broking, there's a much broader issue of temporary employment services because labor broking is also part of temporary employment services. And we have commissioned research currently to look at the broader issue. But the objective of all labor legislation is, of course, to prohibit abusive practices. And one of the key objectives in looking at this area is would be to prohibit certain abusive practices. But what form and nature the interventions will take is subject to the research that we're currently undertaking. We're looking at the legislation to see which areas of the legislation should be amended so that people do not lose their rights through certain practices in the labor market. So the Minister will address this issue much more broadly when he delivers his budgetary speech next week, but there is research that is currently undertaken, and we will then have much more clearer areas identified that should be addressed. Some of these interventions may be non-legislative, others may be amendments to the law. So we'll look at the entire package of interventions to deal with certain abuses that we have come to know about. Thank you, Jefferson.
Sorry, Jefferson, there was a last question which sorry, from a wonderful lady, which deals with the joint programs with the Department of Education. Now, there we have been working very closely with the Department of Education on a number of programs. And I will cite them. The adult basic education, because this is one program that is quite important in the various workplaces, because the majority of our people, especially among the adult workers, find themselves in a very difficult position. They are unable to make use of the new opportunities that arise, training opportunities, because of the barrier of adult literacy and education. And this is one program we have been working very closely with them, although we have emphasized on the training component because of the high dropout rate of adults, especially if you subject them to the normal literacy program. The second one has been in the learnership, internships and apprenticeship programs, because these are programs where the theoretical component of the programs, people who participate in them would normally be released to go to your universities and colleges to get the theoretical component, and they will come back and be facilitated in the form of contracts in the workplace to do the practical application of the knowledge and to get the real world of work experience on the practicalities. And this is where we work with them. There is a program around the qualification framework. We presented the law collectively in Parliament, because at the end of the day, what we wanted to ensure was that any person who gets a qualification in the country, be it following the normal academic education stream or following the work-based learning process, that qualification or certificate allows them to further pursue any form of learning that they want. Over the years, we have had those problems because people who would follow a different stream reached a ceiling where they could not progress further. And if they had to progress, they had to go and start from the beginning, which became a deterrent or discouraged quite a number of people from learning further. And we believe that with the passage of the National Qualification Framework Act and the adjustments that were made in the skills development, at least we will be able to deal with that problem. It is something that we have been debating in the various forums in the last 8 years to try and deal with this problem of mobility of people and the transferability of qualifications.
But the one question about the unemployment figure, the figures that we use are the figures from the official statistics organ of government, which is Statistics South Africa. Statistics South Africa does labor force surveys every 6 months now. It used to be once a year, but now it's every 6 months. And the latest official statistics that were released with regard to unemployment was for September last year, which was, I think, 23.5%. So we only use the official statistics. There's a lot of people speculating about other figures and what it is, but we are obliged to use the official statistics as produced by Statistics South Africa through the labor force surveys, and those are widely publicized when they are released. Thank you, Jim.
I'm satisfied with the response, but I'm also interested to know about the role the department is playing in giving motivational talks at high schools. So in my constituency, usually around September, when they prepare for final exams, we invite the Department of Labor to talk to them as to which subjects
to choose at high school that are talking to the demands of the labor market. Because we now have a high rate of unemployed graduates because they've taken wrong subjects that are not needed by the corporate world.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just add on what the SNDG was offering as a response? We in the presentation he mentioned the appointment of the career counselors, which was just started with them. I think last year we are continuing even this year in terms of our allocation from the National Treasury. Those career counselors work in provinces specifically where they deal with unemployed youth, where they offer career information and guidance. They also, we have also established partnerships with higher education institutions where we again provide career information and guidance. There is also individual and group counseling which is offered by the career counselors where they give life skills like job hunting skills, writing CVs, and also what you've just mentioned. So those are the current the services that we offer to unemployed youth, specifically matrics and the graduates. But we also give those services also within institutions like university.
Maybe if I can also add that beyond that, there are also exhibitions that we conduct whenever we have imbizos and other functions of the department and other departments, like during June 16th, they would normally invite the department where we coordinate all sitters to establish information and career information source in all those events. And in most showgrounds and all that, we normally go to those. We also produce a publication called the Stress and Critical Skills List. This is a publication that starts from the various companies developing their individual critical skills needs, and those are compiled into what we call a sector skills plan. And the 23 sector skills plans, supplemented by information from the Human Science Research Council, then gets consolidated into a SCEF and critical skills list. This was used by GIPSA, and it is the main publication that is being used locally, because it identifies those areas where there is a need, and most institutions are using that publication in terms of directing or making training programs or choices, because they understand the importance of going that route, because that is where jobs are likely to occur and the needs are. We also use that publication with our colleagues in the Department of Home Affairs, because the Home Affairs legislation requires that we assist them in the provision of certificates for people coming from foreign countries to come into the country under the scarce skills. And whenever they publish the quota list, they take the total number of people, if it's 20,000, that we need in a particular area, the quota thereof will be 5,000, and that is the permit that Home Affairs will then publish for allocation purposes. And obviously people follow certain aspects as per the Immigration Act. But those are some of the things that we have in this area over and above what Ms. Nick has said. We acknowledge that it may not have been enough and have given, provided coverage in every community, but through the labor centers and the institutions that we have, including Umsobomvu, it had a number of career centers that were located in various municipalities that we also funded. And as part of our IT system, we were currently involved in a process of linking our information system so that whether you are in Umsobomvu or Department of Labor, you can access that information. And hopefully we will continue that discussion with the National Youth Development Agency, because if you look at that act, the bulk of their work is going to be in that area, and the collaboration with them on the career information and the schooling system is going to be quite important. Thank you, Honorable.
I suppose all these questions have been answered. Now, can we go to the second term round of questions? Honorable Law.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, during the discussions, whilst the officials were explaining, I picked up that the question that I intended asking was already answered through the intervention. Thank you.
Okay. A question from my side. You know, as members of parliament, we are representing the constituencies that have elected to come to parliament. I see in your slides that there's a question of employment creation, also a slide on decent work country program. Now, during our election campaign, we have promised people that will create jobs and decent work for all. And I see it here. Now, when I go back to the people, if I'm asked, what is that the Department of Labor have said? Because what is here, just talk to people in the constituencies. What is that the Department of Labor is going to do to create jobs? The president in his speech in the State of the Nation address, he said that there will be 500,000 jobs that are going to be created. Now, tell me your plan in this slide, and talk to a person who is in my constituency to understand this plan. What is the plan of the Department of Labor that will be understood by the people who are expecting from what the president was saying in his speech?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think when we talk about job creation, there are a number of elements. Now, the one that, and my colleagues can also add, because with us, there are a number of elements. There are interventions that you do to ensure that those who are in employment do not lose their jobs and become unemployed. Now, those relate to things like protection of their rights, your CCMA, your labor relations interventions, and so on, because those are aimed at making sure that when there are dispute strikes and all that, you prevent further job losses. That is the one component, but that is the reactive. But there are those that are social security orientated, which I indicated that when people get injured in employment or they get retrenched or they are likely to be retrenched, such as the layoff, where companies would be saying we are in distress, that is where we intervene in the form of unemployment insurance fund, the compensation fund, to provide that interim income, so that either people, when they are at home on maternity, especially those that do not have maternity rights, etc., can continue to earn an income. The third area is where we are proactive in terms of our skills development intervention. Where you take we work with a number of people. The program in the Correctional Services Department in the prisons is funded by the Department of Labor. This is where all those people who are imminent to be released are assisted in being trained in the various skills such as plumbing, roofing construction, and so on, with the intention of making sure that when they are released, they are linked with the various companies and so on that require people with those skills, so that at the end of the day, you assist in breaking the crime cycle. Because if you don't do that, 2 months down the line, those very same people will be back in prison because they left prison without some form of skills. Now, we are funding the training providers and funding the training programs in the prisons throughout the country under the National Skills Fund. And we have a memorandum of agreement with the correctional services. In terms of the social development funding window, this is where the municipalities will say, we want to build a road, we want to construct houses there, we want to build a community center, etc. We assist in the recruitment of people who are unemployed, train them, and make sure that together with the training providers, they are deployed in those projects whilst paying them the allowances. Whilst they are in training, they get the 30 rand to 50 rand that I talked about, which we fund under the National Skills Fund, and it is distributed through our provincial offices. And at the end of the day, they may get work in short-term jobs that are 3 months, 6 months, etc. It depends on the size of the project and so on. There are no doubt projects, how trains, for instance. If you take some of those big projects, including the building of stadiums, a lot of labor that is working in those stadiums and in the rail sector were recruited in the main from the Department of Labor offices, and they were subsequently trained through the training providers that we have, and then taken on by the various construction companies. And that is how we contribute to that process. Obviously, when there are challenges, because when the project comes to an end, that job ends. However, we believe that if a person has acquired the necessary skills, they are able to enter into self-employment projects. Now, those are very difficult to track down where the people are. But at the end of the day, if you look at people who are constructing walls, who are building all sorts of houses in the townships, etc., and I think the COSATU Job Creation Fund, which Mr. Malisha was the chairperson of, took a very similar model, where at the end of a specific project, then those people will then go into different directions. We acknowledge that we need to have a tracking system so that we can then come and say, this is where the people have gone. But from the study that we commissioned using the Human Science Research Council, they were able to track down a number of people who participated in our learnership program. And they found that up to 70% of them, including those who were participants in the social development programs that we funded in the provinces with the various communities, more than 70% of them are involved in the cooperatives, because from the project they then form their own cooperative to do something. Some going to self-employment, some would normally be involved in further learning and so on. That is how we define the broader process. So that will be mainly the third area where we have also worked with the public works, because most of the learners, if you recall, Chairperson, public works did not have the money for the training component. So we had an agreement where in the last round of public works, the Department of Public Works, on all the learners that they recruited, they will reach an agreement with the Department of Labor to fund the training component while those people are in training. And the money that is allocated towards the stadium or a specific project will go into buying the materials and all that. And the minute people complete the training, and that is where we begin to have difficulties, is that they agree that while they're in training, they will get an allowance, which was about 50 rand and all that. Everybody agreed. But the minute they finish training and they start working on the real project, we have had tensions arising, because then they believe that they are entitled to a living wage, and we believe that that should be in line with the collective bargaining agreement or the minimum wage determined for that sector. And that is how I would broadly explain our contribution towards employment creation. I don't think it is something that we can do on our own without working with other departments. There are other examples that I can cite on agriculture, where agriculture will provide the tractors and the seeds, and they will come to us to help in the training of people on the irrigation, on all sorts of things. Because otherwise, if they provide those things without the training, that is why in some of the processes you find tractors remaining unmaintained and the project collapsing, because people never had the training in terms of the business administration skills and so on. I think other colleagues are free to add on that.
Another question. I understand that there are other national departments that are involved, that you are in partnership with in the realization of the outcome. But from what you are saying, you had a problem in tracing certain people that are trained. If I'm quoting you right, the problem of money that was not coming from public works. Can you state, can you say how many people have been trained, or how much have you contributed? Do you think that what the president has pronounced from the Department of Labor side, is it realizable? Is it something that, as the Department of Labor, as people who should be in the forefront in creation of this job, do you think that is something that you can achieve? With all the categories that you have mentioned, from your side, in your plan, do you think that you can achieve that? What do you have challenges? What is your plan saying? Is your plan saying that you can achieve? Definitely, after the State of the Nation address, you had your own plan, but it means that your plans are going to be turned around in order to suit the government priorities and what the president has said. So in changing your plans, in suiting, in particular, this job creation, what exactly have you done? Do you think that as Department of Labor you can do? If you are saying that we can do, but we have to meet with that partner A, partner B to do this, and this is going to take us so much time. because it's something, you see, it's something that you're going to be judged on. Now it's June. December is around the corner. We need to hear exactly what is that the department will be able to offer as the department. I hear what you are saying about the trainings that are taking place in the prisons. Those programs were there. They've been there long before this pronouncement. But now that there is this pronouncement, how are you going to speak up to, you know, get to the goal that we have set for the nation?
Chairperson, I think I did indicate that in as far as the pronouncement and the Department of Labor's participation in a number of forums, such as the Foresight, the Kota, we were part of those processes. We discussed the strategic framework, and that is why we have realigned this document in line with the priorities, and that is why I indicated the number of meetings that we have scheduled, starting with this week, the Thursday and Friday, with the different managers and senior managers in the provinces are going to finalize their input, and on the 2nd and 3rd of July, we will then be finalizing and adopting this document and tabling it in Parliament so that it forms the basis of our commitment to Parliament based on the new priorities. But I did also indicate that there are areas, Chairperson, that are also under serious discussion. For instance, the area that I talked about, which is the training, there is also a political decision that has been taken to transfer the component of that component to education. But there is a discussion also as to whether aspects such as the training of unemployed, which people in some people in higher education do not believe that that should form part of higher education, should remain within the department, and how do you continue to fund it. Those discussions obviously will have an impact on this process, because whatever we finalize there would then have an impact. But I think because people in higher education, I'm participating in the task team that is with higher education, they know exactly what we are proposing, and when that time of transfer comes, that component will be transferred, including the targets and the levies that are going to be have to be done. Obviously, those are some of the things that will impact on those processes. As for the total amount of money that we spent, I can't say it on top of my head, but we can go back to the annual reports that were produced over the years. I think every year all the CITAs do table their annual reports, and the department does table its annual reports. And there we have audited statements that clearly indicate the total amount of money that we have spent and what we have achieved over the years. And there's no doubt that a lot of people, more than 6 million people have benefited, that is unemployed people. Another 3 million have also benefited amongst people who are employed in the years that we have had during the implementation of the strategy. And I think the other thing that is worth noting, which members of the portfolio committee will have to acknowledge, is the fact that the Department of Labor, to sustain those programs, only depended on the 20% of the total levies collected. The rest of the money collected under the Skills Development Act, even when the transfer happens, it will still have to go back to companies, because that is what the legislation says. It is the money that is meant for sisters to run their programs, mainly for people in employment, and they also take on unemployed people. I believe that what the president announced is realizable. The main thing that we have to do is to strengthen those working relationships so that we avoid duplication in the process, wastage of resources. And I'm sure if the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, as a collective, we can achieve and even exceed those numbers. There are factors such as the economic conditions that are also beyond our control, the climate issues and the technological aspects. But besides those, I think working together, maybe we will be able to achieve those targets, and the Department of Labor will be a contributor to realizing those targets.
No, Chair, I wish to believe that we're still going to discuss. In this case, we're simply going on with the issue of questions. I don't know if that is the case. Because when it comes to that period, and again, because you referred to that fund, which my teacher was chair of, well, he's still chair of that. And the fund has gone up to more than 100 million. And then, during the discussion, we'll be able to point out that there is a problem between the various departments, and perhaps that's what the Department of Labor needs to look into. That there is no coordination at all. The Department of Labor does work there, the Department of Water Affairs does work there. The one that deals with agriculture does work there. There is no cooperation altogether, to the best of our knowledge. And even if you come up with a cohort, it's still a problem. And when we go into discussions there, we need to look into that. But you are raising another very important issue of checking of workers. Once people have been trained in cooperatives, etc., you then don't know where they are. And I think we need to look into that. Once we have gone on, we have dealt with the issue of questions, and we go into the actual discussion. I think what you are raising is very important. Moving, of course, raising this from the point that the acting DG may know that that particular committee has created more than 36,000 jobs, but very many among those are not even, that committee does not know where they are. And that's a very serious problem. And I think, again, when we go into discussion, we'll have to cite that. The Department of Labor needs to, again, say what is it that they're doing with the issue of vulnerable work. Many vulnerable workers who are there in farms, domestics, and so on. What is it that they are doing to make sure that indeed that is looked into? I know in respect of well, law, etc., they will say, indicate that we're doing this and so on and so forth, but in reality, that is not actualized. I think we need to look into that. But like I'm saying, Chair, you are raising very important points. When do we deal with this? When we go into actual discussion, or now at the moment, I don't know.
Those questions, when they are answered, they go into details. That forms part of the discussion. So there will be no stage where we say now we're done with the questions, we go to the discussion. The whole process of questions and comments
there are for or against what the Department of Labor have said form part of the discussion. So if there are other things that you want to raise, or questions or comments, you're welcome to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a little bit concerned, but at the same time, I'm very delighted to hear that the intervention of the Department of Labor with the other directorates. However, Chair, with the explanation given by Mr. Morotoba, I fail to understand, Chairperson, that in the constituency where I'm coming from, if the Department of Labor is assisting with municipalities and with other entities to make sure that certain projects get done, firstly, what I would like to know is, do they have a track and tracing monitoring system to make sure that these projects are being monitored? The reason for my question is, in the province where I'm coming from, a lot of these projects are left half done. Most of them are left in the middle, and they're not being completed. Now, if that is the case that the Department of Labor are intervening in many of these projects, obviously now born from the different municipalities, why do we still have so many projects being left incomplete? And the second question, Chairperson, and it goes, I want to add on the question that you've asked about the 500,000 jobs. In instances where companies get insolvent, obviously, there's nothing we can do about it. That is, it's a fact. Because it could either be because of productivity and obviously financial constraints that allow that process. Now, in view of that, the speaker also mentioned that people's employment would be protected. How would the government protect something like that, which is it's a given? There's nothing we can do about it. It's a given. What systems would they have in place to protect something of that nature?
Thank you. It's more an observation than a question. In line with your concern about job creation and so on, it sounds to me that, from what I'm hearing from the department, that they are not in a position at the moment to give us a new program to create jobs in terms of the president's agenda. It seems that what we have is existing programs which are working and which have created some jobs in the past, but I don't hear at the moment a new program, and I think your question really is an important one because it's asking what new program we are embarking on to scale up the number of new jobs that we create. Now, I haven't read this document because I just got it on my table now this morning, and I don't know whether in it there is a new program to create additional jobs other than the ones that we already have running. But if there isn't, then it sounds to me that the answer to your question is probably that we don't currently have a new program, or there isn't one available, that we're merely going to try and improve the effectiveness of the existing programs. And I think that we should be asking questions around that. Is that going to work? If we've got, let's say, 5 existing programs which are aimed at creating jobs through networking with other departments, if they're producing X number of jobs per year, 36,000 or whatever, are we going to get through those existing programs from 36,000 jobs to 500,000? Is that going to happen? Is that even realistic? I'm not sure that it's realistic. I think that that's an unrealistic situation that we find ourselves in, where we've got this target of 500,000 jobs by the end of the year, just by Christmas. And to think that the existing programs are going to suddenly go from creating 36,000 jobs to 500,000 jobs before Christmas, without a new program that is funded, that is planned, that is organized, I don't think it's going to be achieved. So I think you're asking a very important question. I hope that some of the answers will be in the red document once you have a chance to read it. If they're not, then we're going to have to revisit this issue again down the line. So it's more a comment than a question. I think that we've got an issue there that is a big one that we need to deal with.
Just
You see, I did not want to say anything on the documents that were given in the last moment because I believe that the committee secretary has been speaking to the department, and in fact, as I was going around greeting people, the DG, acting DG, did apologize for bringing the document late. That, though, put us in a very disadvantageous position because we might be asking questions that are contained in this document. We are asking questions out of our heads, and they might be in the documents, they might not be in the documents. So in future, I did speak to the committee secretary that she must phone all the people concerned who should be giving us presentations before they come, preferable 5 days before. I don't know why is it possible. It can be impossible because if it means that you must work 24 hours a day or Sunday, you must do it. Because it's what we've been doing. We're doing that in our political parties. If there's something that we need to get, there's a deadline, we have to do it. So in future, we will not accept any presentation that will be brought in front of the committee. We want those presentations to be with us 5 days before. So the department is not coming here for the first time, so there will be no excuse. I think we must start working on all the things that we'll be asking or want to get from you. Same thing to the entities that are coming tomorrow. Msobongu is coming tomorrow, not on Friday. I think tomorrow is coming in front of the committee. Even to them, we have sent a message that says at least 12 o'clock today, we must have those documents. So it's going to be like that members of the department. It's not going to be in any other way. We want documents in advance, so that we go through documents when you come here, we know exactly what is that you are planning, what is that you have done. It will be in that manner. Thank you. Honorable Sikeleji.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe to assist as well in listening to the comments that you alluded to already, that if we can be informed of the media sectors determining the creation of jobs, so that we can together just take to the realistic of the nursing sector, if it is realistic that they will create jobs or not, and in the spirit of augmenting one another and not maybe accusing.
Just before, I think the answer that the department has given to us. Let's give them this opportunity of meeting with the stakeholders because they are saying they are going to come up with a plan. There will be some turnaround strategy. That's what I heard. So they will be coming with the document or with the presentation that tells us exactly. Because I think that you are not going to get a straight answer from what we have heard. You've asked a number of questions. Unless they're telling you that they'll be able to give you an answer in what you're saying. But from my side, I would suggest that let's give them the chance to go back, meet all the stakeholders that and come with this proper plan, a plan that is going to be talking to the target that we need at the end of the year. I believe that that target is realistic. It is just that each stakeholder has to do its role, has to play its role. And where there are other stakeholders who are not coming to the party, we are there as members of the parliament to pull them to come to the party so that these target is realized. So we will be talking to business as well to give us their plan, because it means that everybody, all the stakeholders in this creation of jobs should be coming in front of this committee to tell us their plans. The plans should be changing. They've been having the plans for years, but now we need plans that are going to produce the product that we want to see at the end, and we have to do it. We will be doing it. We are going to do it. We have to do it. So I think let's pardon them for today in that particular question. I don't think we'll get an answer. Give them time. Thank you, sir. Oh, thank you. If that's the case, it means we have come to the end of this meeting.
Sorry, maybe just before we go off, may I ask?
Yes.
Chair, the questions that I've posed, they were not answered. Are those the ones that you are suggesting that we're going to come back on another occasion and then they will be answered? I'm just asking that for the purposes of clarity.
I'm very sorry. The only question that I was relating to is the question of Honorable Sikeledi. I totally forgot about the questions that you asked. There's anything that the department wants to say on the questions of Honorable Law, please go ahead.
Okay. Maybe let my colleagues can add on the other side. I think there was a question around the projects that are collapsing in municipalities. Now, I think we need to draw a distinction. Let me give an example. If a municipality is going to build houses and approaches the Department of Labor and the various contractors and says, this is a group of people in our community, assist us in training them, to give them bricklaying skills, plastering, roofing, and all that. And that is done, and those people complete the programs satisfactorily, and they are tested, and they get the certificate to the effect that they are competent in those areas. That is one area where we start and end. However, when it comes to the tenders and who is managing the project, supplying the materials, etc., I think that is where it gets complicated, because we would not necessarily be involved in that area. We train people after looking at their plans on the understanding that they need them for these areas, and this is where jobs are likely to emerge, and that is where they are going to need people. So I can give those kind of examples and so on and so on. So I think there is a need to understand our role, where it starts and where it ends, and where we don't have jurisdiction, because otherwise you make this project to be very, very complex. And I think one will beg for that understanding, because if we start running municipalities, that will be going beyond what our mandate is. I think that I agree with you, Chairperson, because the job creation issue, it depends on a number of factors, which I don't think as the Department of Labor alone we can succeed. And I gave a number of examples. If you want to create jobs in agriculture, the Department of Land and Affairs and the Department of Agriculture can give people land, they can give them seeds and tractors, but without the necessary skills to plow the land, to look after all those things. Those things collapse. And that is why they would come to us and say, look, partner with us to bring this component. We are giving these people land. The Department of Water Affairs will say, we will pump water for irrigation purposes, etc. And we then have to work with them in ensuring the necessary skills with the agricultural sector and the necessary research agency to look after the stock and all that. That is where I emphasize the coordination, and I think that is the point that Honorable Madisha was emphasizing, that if there's no coordination and collaboration, that is where you easily find the project collapsing. And normally where we go in, we insist on those partners to come together with a number of others, because we also look at their plans and we also raise some of the questions with them to say, look, we understand our role, but if you don't address this point and this point, we will come in there and this project we will train people, but it will collapse. In some instances we win, in some instances we lose. But that has been the kind of life that we have been involved in.
Chairperson, just on the question raised, I think it's also Honorable Lowe, around insolvency and what systems there are to protect workers. There is, of course, insolvency legislation, which is administered by the Department of Justice. A few years ago, there were amendments made to that legislation to protect the rights of workers in instances of insolvency. That's the first issue there. Because when there is an insolvency, there's a liquidation, and then workers lose out in that process. So the law was strengthened to protect the interests of workers in situations like that. The second issue is, of course, that where large-scale retrenchments are taking place, we have the CCMA that provides facilitation at the request of the parties in that situation. And what the CCMA does through the facilitation is to make sure that there is a meaningful engagement between the employer and the workers to seek alternatives to retrenchment. Some of the alternatives may include working short time, having a temporary layoff so as to protect the jobs. So the CCMA has been quite successful in doing that. And then, of course, in the Labor Relations Act, there is the requirement that where employers do embark on retrenchments, that there is proper consultation, that there is a meaningful engagement, that there is disclosure of information, because some of the problems that have occurred in the past is that employers don't disclose sufficient information to the trade union or to the worker representatives. They just come and tell people, though, we've looked at that alternative, we looked at that alternative, but there's been no meaningful engagement. The Labor Relations Act has been strengthened to ensure that there is proper consultation, that there's meaningful engagement, and that people do consider all the alternatives possible so as to prevent job loss. So there's a number of instruments that are that can be utilized to prevent job loss. Sometimes people take the shortcut and don't consult and just want to get the workers out, because if you want to cut costs, the easy and the quick way to cut costs is to cut your labor costs. So the law, the LRA has been strengthened in that regard. In regard to insolvencies, the insolvency legislation has been strengthened. And then, of course, also the facilitation that is available by the CCMA to assist the parties in finding an amicable solution to that situation. In addition to that, Chairperson, the department itself also has at the provincial level retrenchment response teams, so that where there is a retrenchment, officials of the department should go to the workplace, engage with the parties there to assist them also in seeking alternatives to that, but also to look at where there is eventually a retrenchment, what retraining opportunities, what other opportunities are available to those workers should they then leave that workplace. So they then get redirected to
training opportunities so as to either go into self-employment, somebody may want to go and fix appliances, so you can go off and get training to fix fridges or to fix televisions. Those are options that they can utilize. But and also as part of the social plan activities, you also then look at the community where these workers come from, what local economic development projects are there, so that you can then direct them to those projects in consultation with the local authorities to see how those people can then be integrated into some of those opportunities there. And in the employment services of the department, we register work seekers. We then also ask employers to register their vacancies so that we are able to match the work seekers' skills to the jobs that are available through the vacancies that employers advertise. We are trying to compel employers to register their vacancies with the department so it will be easier for us to then match the skills of the work seekers to the skills requirements of the jobs that are available. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Kettlegast, thank you very much.
Honorable Madisha, about vulnerable workers. What are we doing about vulnerable workers? We have, in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, sectoral determinations for sectors of vulnerable workers. We have a sectoral determination for contract cleaners. There's a contract cleaning section. I'm sure that contract cleaners are also utilized in Parliament to clean the environment here. There's a sectoral determination for them, and sectoral determination sets out a basic floor of rights for those workers in addition to minimum wages that are then legislated for the sector. We have it for the civil engineering sector, we have it for the private security sector, we have it for the domestic worker sector, the farm worker sector, wholesale and retail. These restaurants, when we go to eat there, ask the people that serve you one day, what are they being paid? Are they paid through tips or are they getting a basic wage? So we have corrected that because people were paid in terms of tips before, and not a basic salary. So the hospitality sector determination, that cannot take place anymore. We have the forestry sector determination for people working in forestries. We have a sectoral determination for people in the taxi sector, the minibus taxis, and also for children in performing arts. So we have covered a range of vulnerable sectors by providing a minimum floor of rights and minimum wages for people in those sectors. Of course, the next issue is the enforcement of that. And enforcement should be a partnership between the Department of Labor in sectors, but also trade unions that operate in their sectors. Should bring forward any complaints of non-compliance, because the legislation that we have on the statute book is legislation that we had agreed between government, organized business, and organized labor. So it's incumbent upon all three of those social partners to ensure greater compliance with the legislation, including the sectoral determinations where vulnerable workers are. And our inspection system work on a two-way basis. There are routine inspections where inspectors go out. There are blitz inspections where a sector or an area is targeted to ensure compliance. But there's also the complaint system, where workers that have complaints can phone them in. They can visit the Department of Labor offices, and then the Department of Labor inspectors will then go out to follow up that complaint, to have the complaint resolved, or they pick these abuses up or non-compliance up through routine inspections and blitz inspections. Thank you, Chair.
Sir? inspectors as one. It's a question. Just tell me what do labor inspectors do when they go to the factories? There's a question of compliance. You'll find that certain companies are given the stars. There's a certain stars that you give to companies because they comply to certain requirements. But the same companies, you'll find that the workers are complaining about the working conditions. Do you have two types of, or different types of inspectors? Why is it not always the case that the Department of Labor will be proactive in seeing or finding that the conditions that the workers are working under are not proper? So my question is around the inspectors of the Department of Labor.
Thank you, Chairperson. As Mr. Kutluza has indicated,
Before you answer that question, can I just take a rider on that question quickly, please? Relating to the inspectors. There was a case in the paper, if I remember correctly, where staff was burned to death or they were locked inside some room. Now, I just want to find out, when I, for instance, started business, but I don't treat my workers well, how do my workers know that they can maybe make contact with these inspectors? How do workers who are not skilled at all, how do they have access to that information? Especially when they are not members of a labor union. That's the one question. And then secondly, I'm trying to remember what the second question is now. No, I've just slipped my mind here. I can't remember. I'll come back to it. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. To answer your question, I think Mr. Kittles has covered the area on enforcement partly in terms of our legislation. The inspectors of the department go out to companies to enforce, to monitor implementation and then enforce compliance to legislation that we administer. That includes the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, Employment Equity, and other legislation. Where they find a non-compliance, they then issue notices where they give employers time to correct whatever that they have identified as non-compliance. There will also be areas where they issue a prohibition notice where there's a life-threatening situation, like for instance an incidence of injury or even fatalities. Then in those cases they will stop the operation or close down the company. But in all, the inspectors go out to monitor implementation and then enforce compliance to legislation. You also asking a question in terms of saying why are we not proactive, as Mr. Kettlegas has indicated, that there are two types of inspection. Proactive inspections, ideally, we should be going out to educate, advise employers in terms of employers and employees in terms of their rights and obligations. But due to capacity within the department, I think in the presentation it was mentioned that we have really, we are a team on the ground in terms of inspection. Where we get our inspectors pushed by other government departments, where there's a better remuneration. For instance, also now, we have constraints in terms of capacity within the occupational health and safety area of focus, where really our inspectors are being pushed by other government departments. So we are unable to do those proactive inspections. But an attempt is done through our blitz inspections where we target a certain sector where we believe that that particular sector is a high-risk sector. Like, for instance, construction. We know that now currently there is a boom in terms of economic activity around infrastructure development. So that particular sector which should then be identified as a high-risk sector, where we then focus and have a blitz inspection. And in that case, that's a proactive, it counts as a proactive inspection. But also in terms of the workers now, where they don't know their rights, we have information sessions, where our inspectors also conduct information sessions. For instance, the police inspections that I'm talking about, they are preceded by advocacy campaigns where we educate, we issue pamphlets informing workers about their rights. We, as I said, that we conduct information sessions. But they are also at liberty to invite the department where there are areas where they need more information about their rights. We also have complaints from individual workers where we then investigate those complaints. Where the employer is non-compliant, then the employer will be enforced to comply. Like, for instance, where there is a dispute in terms of pay, then as is indicated here that there are areas where we have minimum wages which employers are obliged to pay. Where there's non-compliance, our inspectors will then issue a notice for the employer to comply. So both those which are unable to access the department in terms of literacy, we attend to those in terms of information sessions and also addressing the complaints. I'm not sure if I've answered all the questions that you have posed.
Yeah, I just came back now. What happens is if I go back to that case where I told you about those staff that were print, I think it was foreign employers, employees. We just started this, okay? When foreigners, say, set up business here, how do you as a department work with those employers, those foreign employers? How do they, do they comply with our laws in our country? Okay, they come from another country, they set up a business here, that you'll find that people that say that they set up business here, they do not comply with our laws. So how do you work to make sure that there is compliance? Thank you.
As I have indicated earlier on, once you open a business within the country, obviously you go through the processes in terms of home affairs and also the workers. Also, they go through that route where they will then be given a work permit. If you are in the country legally, you have to comply with the legislation. So we'll have to enforce compliance even in those instances. But we have experienced challenges where we found that there are employees who are in the country illegally, especially in the construction industry. There is a lot of those incidents. But even then, the department will do what it's supposed to do in terms of ensuring that the employer complies with the legislation that's applicable.
Just an emphasis on this proactiveness of the inspectors from the side of the department. I understand, I hear the constraints that you are under as department when it comes to inspectors, which makes you not to be in a position of doing your education and give advices to workers. But in our manifesto, in the ANC manifesto, the Republican Party's manifesto during elections, we promised people decent work. And decent work, it means also, primarily it's working condition. It's the salary that equals the work that you are doing. So if you have a problem, then in this area of inspecting, of being proactive in detecting the conditions of where the workers are, then we are going to have a problem. Now, for us to be able to deliver what we have promised to the people, I think the department, when you come back again, we need in your plan, in whatever engagements that we'll be having with the stakeholders, you need to tell us how are you going to do away, or how are you going to sort out this problem of inspectors? Because once you are able to do that, we will have less accidents, for instance. I'm not going to ask the questions of what is the situation in the mines, are you able to check whether this mine is got all these problems. But when you come back, definitely for decent work, decent working conditions, the Department of Labor should be telling us there will be no problem of inspection. If there's a problem, meaning that there's a problem. I don't know that problem. Is that a problem? We're not told that the problem is as a result of the budget. Or when you ask for the budget was cut. I don't know. Also, the question of health and safety, I understand they're also undercapacitated. Those are serious matters, very serious matters when you talk about workers. So the sooner you sort out these problems by giving us your plan as to how are you going to ensure that at least basic conditions of work are in order, the better. Because it's part of the promise that was made. It is also part of the speech of the State of the Nation address of the President. Basic conditions of work, decent jobs, it's a big package. So where you can come in, you must tell us your plan, so that if you fail in that plan, at least we would have seen that this is your plan, this is what you wanted to do, this is what you were not able to do, and we'll be told challenging. And where we need to come in as members of parliament, assist the department to get to where they want to be in terms of this health and safety conditions and conditions of work, all those issues. At least we would have delivered to the nation, would have done our best. Because if we're talking about workers, the major thing is salaries, that equals the job, is working conditions, it's labor brokering that you have mentioned. It's about casualization of a number of things. So all those issues that you need to look at as the department, please come back to us with a revised. I'm saying revised because these programs have been there. But these programs were not able to deliver what we wanted them to do. Now it means that we cannot fail our nation after the president has spoken. We have to deliver. All of us. We are also in partnership with you. Where are you stuck? We'll stop there. I don't know if there are any words that you want to say from the department or we close.
Just to thank you for giving us the opportunity. I'm sure in some areas where there are materials, maybe further literature that you want, given the fact that we did raise with the previous committee instances where, for instance, given the information that we have in the department, that they approach us, including the research team, so that we are able to share maybe documents and both previous, including, and I agree with you, Chairperson, and the new ones, where maybe in terms of the slides, we may have also summarized some of the information. For example, on this one, without necessarily opening the discussion, we did talk about this, the issue that we knew which was a problem, the mining, the health department inspector, and the fact that the problem was that when it is raised, you find that it happens here, but the jurisdiction is somewhere, and the people believe that, no, it belongs to the Department of Labor. So that is why Cabinet took a decision to say, put everything under one roof to avoid those problems and so on, which is why we need your assistance in making sure that legislation, which is going to ensure the integration, is passed through Parliament so that we can solve that problem and avoid the finger pointing. But overall, Chairperson, I think during the coming days, I'm sure the statutory bodies working with us will be giving more information on how we are trying to coordinate our work to the best of our ability. And I'm sure when you give us the opportunity next time, when our stress plan is finalized, some of the things will be much more clearer, and where others you believe that was not answered in well, I'm sure your guidance will assist in that process. And thank you.
Okay, and thank you very much, members of the department, and we thank you for the presentation. We are new, most of us are new, including myself in this field, so I'm learning. So some of the questions that I'm asking, you can hear that the questions that are coming from a person who has no knowledge of what is asking, but I'm just very curious to know and understand, because for us to be able to do what we've been asked to do by our constituencies, it means we must engage with you. So by engaging does not mean that we hate. We don't hate you, we love you so much, but we just, all of us must be. Any question will come at any time. We'll ask you questions because we want you to do what is right. And I hope that we'll keep that relationship with the members of Parliament in a good condition. When we want to ask you questions or when you want to ask something from us, don't hesitate to call me or call the office. We've got a acting committee secretary, Argentina Kakaza. He is the secretary of is the passage separately to the chair. I'm sure it's the same that is familiar with you. She has been here long before us. So with those few words, we thank you, and the meeting is adjourned.
It's a long time.